Welcome to Listening Station by Feral Practice. In this episode, Bristol entomologist Ray Barnett talks moths and more with Feral Practice at Mangotsfield and includes a few highlights from the Bristol Moth Group meeting they'd both attended the previous night.
That's a red underwing. Oh no, is it?
That's a dark.
No. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good lord.
That's a lifer for me.
Yeah.
That's the one. What's this torch here?
What do you know?
New for me.
There's going to be a big spread.
So what you see in the end is a beautiful thing with
good,
the
good. Thank you.
It's gone under there. There it is in the corner.
Oh, yeah, stick it there.
Red underwing of duck. Crimson underwing.
Oh, and it's out. So what makes it the dark crimson one? What's the...
They are actually remarkably difficult to separate, I think. I mean, pale tends to have a sort of a broader pale band across it with a more obvious pale spot on the forewing. There's a difference in the hindwing markings, aren't there? On the near edge.
Yeah,
of the
I think so.
It's on your left leg.
There it is.
I think it's quite an exciting group of moth trackers, but you wouldn't really realise it, would you?
I don't know.
Yeah. No swearing as well. You're still recording, eh?
Yeah. I've worked at Bristol Museum and Art Gallery since 1989. Throughout that whole time, I've continued to pursue my own particular interests in natural history and especially in insects entomology. And so that's 33 years of living in one place and having a chance to look at and to start to understand what's happening in the environment a bit more. When I first came here, there was a day-flying moth called the scarlet tiger, which was unheard of around here. And then suddenly, that moth started to appear around Bristol. And it's a day-flying moth. It's bright scarlet, and it flies on sunny days in the summer. And we started to see reports of it, and we started to find them ourselves around the city. And since then, it's become really well established. And there's a related moth called the Jersey tiger moth, which also flies in the daytime and is more yellow than orange, but again, it's a warning coloration. Now, the Jersey tiger moth is a really interesting species because it's actually a Mediterranean moth originally. And if you've ever been to Rhodes, the island of Rhodes in the Mediterranean, they have a place called the Valley of the Butterflies in the middle of the island, where it's actually very shady and cool. And in the middle of the summer, these moths, it's called the Valley of the Butterflies, but it's the Jersey tiger, they congregate there in hundreds and thousands of them. Somehow, some got translocated into Devon around the Torquay area in the 19th century. And that little population has managed to survive there because it's so mild in that part of the UK. And then in around the early to mid 2000s, that started to expand its population and it reached the Bristol region in around 2008-2009 and now is really common. This year people have been seeing maybe 30 in one day around Bristol. We take great pleasure in telling people that butterflies are just a small group of day flying moths in reality.
Ah, yes, there's more day flying
really
moths than butterflies, aren't there?
There are, yeah. Yeah, it is true. Yeah.
Okay.
People say that moths have furry antennae, and that the way they hold their wings, butterflies hold them closed over their back, and moths tend to have them flat, that sort of thing. There are exceptions to all those rules. So there's 2,600 types of butterfly and moth in the country.
Mm-hmm.
About 60 of them are butterflies, and they are just a group of moths that have become specialised to fly in the day, basically,
okay.
Which we, through cultural history, call butterflies.
Yeah.
What we've been monitoring in the last 30 years and that's been shown not only to be around Bristol, it's been also been shown to be across the whole country, is that many of our native species of moth have declined by about 40% in abundance over that period of time. Cuckoos, most Bristolians growing up today will have never heard a cuckoo. They've declined hugely over England. We have to make sure the whole environment is protected if you're going to keep them. And where they still occur is correlated with where you still get the species of moth that have big, hairy caterpillars, and that's their favourite food. And there's a complication here of what's actually affecting populations. There's a combination of climate change, but also where we see loss of abundance of native species. We think that's probably as much to do with the pesticide use in agriculture, the intensive agricultural activity that takes place today. In effect, most farms are using factory-type approaches to create homogeneous crops with very few weed species in them. Therefore, there's very little for insects to feed on. And it's a question of having lost many of the caterpillar food plants. You know, moths are big pollinators of plants as well, like many other insects. So that's happening.
If you're a scientist, entomologist, and you're studying particular species, because a lot of entomology gets quite specialist, I'm presuming, and then, you know, that species goes through a really tough time, not necessarily extinction worldwide, but certainly, you know, locally. How does that affect the people that are studying those species?
I think most people are very pessimistic about the situation at the moment, that despite the fact that we've known a lot of these declines for a long time, it still seems incredibly hard to get society as a whole to do anything to stop it. And it only takes one global emergency, I have to say, like the Ukraine invasion, and suddenly we're talking about coal fire coming back and buying more oil rather than trying to find a way to stop polluting our environment with fossil fuels. So it's to keep positive when you're studying these things, you have to focus upon positive areas that you can make an impact, to hold on to those and use those and push for those. We still get people asking, what are wasps for? Wouldn't the world be better without them? And the fact is, it wouldn't be a better world without wasps. They have a role to play. We live as part of the environment ourselves, and we sometimes forget that we are integral to the natural world. We're all part of the same world, and what we do, accidentally or on purpose, to that environment will come back to bite us.
Listening Station was commissioned as part of Mangotsfield Folly, a project curated by Suzanne Heath in partnership with Artel 31. It's supported by Arts Council England, Emerson's Green Town Council, and Sustrans.